नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम द सिक्स्थ कैंटो चैप्टर नंबर 16, चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड किंग चित्रकेतु मीट्स अ लॉर्ड, टेक्स्ट नंबर 29। तथा कतिपयोः विद्ययेद्दा मनोगतिः जगाम देवदेवस्य शेषस्य चरणान्तिकम्। ततः कतिपयोः विद्ययेदा मनोगतिः जगाम देवदेवस्य शेषस्य चरणान्तिकम्। Translation purported by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Thereafter, within a very few days, by the influence of the mantra that Chitraketu had practiced, his mind became increasingly enlightened in spiritual progress, and he attained shelter at the lotus feet of Anantadev. Purport. A devotee's ultimate achievement is to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in any one of the planets in the spiritual sky. As a result of the rigid execution of devotional service, a devotee receives all material opulences if these are required. Otherwise, a devotee is not interested in material opulences, nor does the Supreme Lord award them. When a devotee is actually engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, his apparently material opulences are not material. They are all spiritual. For example, if a devotee spends money to construct a beautiful and costly temple, the construction is not material but spiritual. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. A devotee's mind is never diverted to the material side of the temple. The bricks, stone and wood used in the construction of the temple are spiritual, just as a deity, although made of stone, is not stone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. The more one advances in spiritual consciousness, the more he can understand the elements of devotional service. Nothing in devotional service is material. Everything is spiritual. Consequently, a devotee is awarded so-called material opulence for spiritual advancement. This opulence is an aid to help the devotee advance towards the spiritual kingdom. Thus, Maharaj Chitraketu remained in material opulence as a Vidyadharapati, master of the Vidyadharas, and by executing devotional service, he became perfect within a very few days and returned home back to Godhead, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sesha, Ananta. A karmi's material opulence and a devotee's material opulence are not on the same level. Sri Madhavacharya comments in this way. Anyantaraya minam vishnum upasyanya samipagaha bhaved yogyataya tasya padam va prapnuyan vanaraha. By worshipping Lord Vishnu, one can get whatever he desires. But a pure devotee never asks Lord Vishnu for any material benefit. Instead, he serves Lord Vishnu without material desires and is therefore ultimately transferred to the spiritual kingdom. In this regard, Srila Veera Raghava Acharya comments, Yatesta Gattir Iti Artaha. By worshipping Vishnu, a devotee can go wherever he likes, can get whatever he likes. Maharaj Chitraketu wanted only to return home, back to Godhead. And therefore, he achieved success in that way. So we see over here, Maharaj Chitraketu, such an amazing pastime. After having suffered so much, when Narad Muni comes to him once again and gives him a very specific instruction to chant a particular mantra, we see how Maharaj Chitraketu, by just chanting this mantra for a few days, in fact just about a week, he became a Vidyadhara Pati. He became the lord of the Vidyadharas. It's a very, very, very powerful mantra to be elevated directly to the spiritual world. Of course, Maharaj Chitraketu was living in a different yuga altogether. And in such yugas, it is possible that by the chanting of specific mantras, you could get elevated to the heavenly planets. And in this particular verse, we see that by chanting this mantra once again for a very few days, Maharaj Chitraketu goes home back to Godhead. So we are accustomed to be chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for how many years and years and years, and we don't have any hope that at the end of this lifetime, or we have a hope, but there is no guarantee unless and until we really purify our consciousness to such an extent that we become completely detached from this material world and fix our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna and are really able to get the benefit of chanting the holy names, only then we will have some chance of going home back to Godhead. Yeah. So Kali Yuga, things are easy, but still not so easy compared to what Maharaj Chitraketu. He was so fortunate, just in a few days, maybe 10 days, he had this opportunity to go home back to Godhead. So one very nice point that we see over here is that Maharaj Chitraketu made it his life and goal to, life's goal to follow the instructions of his spiritual master. So Narad Muni gave him a very specific instruction and Maharaj Chitraketu perfected his life just by following that instruction. So similarly, we see also from the life of Dhruva Maharaj. Although his first spiritual master was his mother, Suniti, but as he was going into the forest, he met his actual spiritual master, Narad Muni. And Narad Muni was trying to test him to see whether he is fixed up in his determination to execute whatever instructions his mother had given him, that is to go to the forest and try to find out Narayan. So Narad Muni initially started telling him that the forest is not the right place for you. You're a small boy. What does it matter? A small thing like this should not be taken by you very seriously. Go home. Go home and play with the children, with other children. Don't be too much affected by all these things. So Dhruva Maharaj, of course, was a Kshatriya. And he had already made up his mind that somehow or the other he would go find Narayan. And not only find Narayan, get for himself a kingdom which was higher or which was more exalted than what his great-grandfather Brahma ever owned. So he was so fixed in his resolution that somehow or the other he will achieve what he wanted. So he went into the forest and then by chanting. So when Narad Muni saw that Dhruva Maharaj was so fixed up in his determination, he gave him this very special mantra to chant. A different mantra than what mantra was given to Maharaj Chitraketu by the same spiritual master. So different mantras are given for different situations. And in this particular age of Kali Yuga, we have this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In our sampradaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us that just by chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra once, we will be able to perfect our lives. So, Dhruva Maharaj chanted this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, so rigidly and so fixed. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the reason why Dhruva Maharaj attained perfection was that he followed the instructions of his spiritual master very, very strictly. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further comments that each and every one of us have to understand that the most important thing in our life is to follow the instructions of our spiritual master. We have to take the instructions of spiritual master as the most important goal of our life. And unless and until we do that, we will not be able to make any tangible advancement on the path of Krishna consciousness. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadat nagato kutubi. The spiritual master comes and gives us all mercy to ensure that we make advancement in our spiritual life. But that mercy, we have to grab it. The mercy is accessible to each and every one of us. But those of us who are following his instructions strictly, to them, advancement in Krishna consciousness is very, very rapid. And we have to understand that it is not necessary that the spiritual master is giving to every one of us very specific instruction. Like Srila Prabhupada would tell his disciples very often, when they would go to him asking him for specific instructions, he would tell them that my instructions are all there in the books. You just have to read my books and everything is there. And if you just apply those instructions in your life will be perfect. So of course there are different types of instructions. We have very specific instructions that are given to a disciple. And we have general instructions. But that disciple is successful. That disciple who understands actually the mood of the spiritual master, rather than asking for an instruction or just relying on a particular instruction, if he is able to understand what is the mood of my spiritual master. And by understanding the mood of the spiritual master, if he executes his duties properly, Krishna is ultimately the Paramatma situated in the heart of each and every one of us. So we don't have to make an external show to the spiritual master that we are following his instructions. Like His Grace Dwarkadish Prabhu was telling me today morning, what are the two most important things in order to establish this connection with the spiritual master? One is a genuine service attitude, and second is proper sadhana. So these are the two most important requirements for us, for our spiritual life, as well as to establish the connection with our spiritual master. Because it is not necessary that the spiritual master is there with us physically all the time in order to guide us. But to the extent that we are applying these two instructions in our life, to that extent, we make spiritual progress. And we see in the scriptures so many instances of how the spiritual master gives very specific instruction to his disciples, and the disciples, just by following those instructions, they perfect their lives. Like in the case of the sons of Daksha, the 10,000 sons of Daksha, they were sent by their father to the forest in order to perform austerities so that they could return back and become perfect grihasthas. But then on the way to the forest, whom did they meet? Once again, Narad Muni. And Narad Muni preaches to them and tells them, what's the purpose of this human form of life? It's not just to marry, have children. A human form of life is meant for higher purposes, renunciation. And his preaching was so effective that all the 10,000 sons decided to renounce and become brahmacharis. Each and every one of them. And then they perfected their life and went home back to Godhead. And the next lot, Daksha of course was very much upset about this, but he didn't outwardly express his anger. And again, Daksha being a Prajapati, he could create
so many sons, and next lot of sons, 1,000 sons. And again they were sent to the forest in order to perform austerity so that they could become perfect grihasthas. And on the way to the forest, again they met Narad Muni, and again Narad Muni told them that you should renounce everything. And of course we know the story, how Narad Muni, being who he is, comes to Daksha and tells him that I did all this. Anybody else in his position would just run away. But he was ready to confront Daksha and face him and tell him that this is what I did. And then Daksha becomes so angry that he curses him. But the point is that just by following the instructions of the spiritual master, we see how they perfect their lives. Then similarly, we see from the pastime of Maharaj Priyavrat. Priyavrat was a brother of Maharaj Uttanapad, son of Swayambhu Manu. And actually, he was an elder brother. And he comes into contact with Narad Muni. Narad Muni preaches to him and he says that I don't have to have anything to do with the kingdom. Actually, he was the heir apparent to the throne, not Maharaj Uttanapad. So he decides to go to the mountains, Himalayas, and practice penances, following the instructions of his spiritual master, Narad Muni. But later on, when a situation demands that he come back, because Dhruva goes home back to Godhead, and there is nobody to rule the kingdom, at that time, Swayambhu Manu approaches Priyavrat Maharaj, but Maharaj Priyavrat tells Swayambhu Manu that I don't want to have anything to do with this. Please allow me to remain where I am. But Brahma, the father of Swayambhu Manu, had, when he came personally and told Priyavrat Maharaj that your higher goal in life is to do your duty, and your real duty at this point of time is to take over this kingdom because there's nobody else to take over the kingdom. Then Maharaj Priyavrat succumbs. And the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Narad Muni, who actually preached to him to take a renounced order of life, was not unhappy. He was not displeased. Because ultimately, Maharaj Priyavrat was following instruction of a superior spiritual master. Because ultimately, Narad Muni's spiritual master was Lord Brahma himself. And then Maharaj Priyavrat comes back, takes over the reins of the kingdom, rules the kingdom for over 1 billion years. Very, very long span. And then towards the end, he gets married, of course. His queen's name was Barismati. And towards the end, he realizes that what is the use of all this? Please allow me to go back to the forest so that I can practice austerities and go home back to Godhead. So the subtle instructions of the spiritual master are actually what are more important than the gross instruction or the specific instruction that is applicable to all of us, the general instruction that are given to all of us. If we are able to understand what is the desire of the spiritual master, like when Srila Prabhupada was just about to leave the planet, he told his disciples, "You will please me by the way you cooperate with each other." In one sense, there's a very specific instruction. But it has such a deep meaning. Because the whole basis of spiritual life is the relationship among the devotees. What sort of a relationship we are having amongst each other, that is the basis of spiritual life. Because if that particular aspect is removed from spiritual life, then there's no difference between material life and spiritual life. Because the nature of the material world is not to cooperate with each other. Or at the most cooperate for the purpose of each other's sense gratification. To the extent that we are able to gratify each other's senses, to that extent we cooperate with one another. And this situation you can see anywhere and everywhere. Whether it is your house, family members cooperate with one another. Very rarely, of course, you have situations where the family members are so genuinely affectionate to one another. But in Kali Yuga, such situations are becoming more and more rare now. So even among family members, we find that the family members are cooperating with each other only for the purpose of their own sense gratification. Particularly among the very wealthy families, we see that this is becoming so common nowadays. The father or the grandfather might have earned money working very, very hard, very sincerely. Throughout his life, he must have slogged and tried so many different, put himself through so many austerities in order to earn the wealth that he has earned. But then when it comes to the second generation or the third generation, the family members are fighting among each other so bitterly. It is really fortunate that the person who has earned the wealth would have passed away by that time. Otherwise, if he were to see it, he would be so much affected. That is this what I've earned this wealth for? Is this what I've slogged or done so many austerities for? That all my children should be fighting with each other? The reason why he earns money is he thinks to himself that I am able to take care of so many generations of mine. And because of that, he is working so hard. But then at the end of the day, we find that the family members are involved in bitter battles going on for several years. And ultimately, the only beneficiaries are the lawyers. They are the people who like to encourage this sort of battles that are taking place. Because for them, ultimately, they are making money. But what is the mental trauma? What is the anxiety that is caused? Is it worth it? If only they had cooperated with one another, life would have been so much more happy. And the same thing we see, big companies fighting with each other when they could have been actually cooperating. So this material world is a situation. Material world is a place where there is no cooperation except to the extent that it facilitates our sense gratification. And once that sense gratification is removed, then the cooperation ends. I want to talk about family members, even husband and wife today. We see that ultimately the basis of that cooperation between the husband and wife is the sense gratification that they can provide to each other. And the moment that sense gratification is withdrawn, then there's no more cooperation. But spiritual life is exactly the opposite of material life. The material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everybody cooperates with one another. And this is the most basic instruction of the acharyas. Just cooperate with one another to spread the mission of my spiritual master. This is what was Srila Prabhupada's constant plea to all his disciples, particularly when they would be having differences of opinion among themselves, and then they would take it to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada would become so upset. He'd say that, finally, you are the people who have to run this institution, and unless and until you all don't cooperate with each other, how can I expect that I would be free from all these management responsibilities? Please relieve me from my management responsibilities so that I can devote my time to writing Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and all these books. So he would request his disciples again and again. Of course, this was a personal training that Srila Prabhupada would give to his disciples. And because of that, we see today our movement has flourished to such an extent. Temples opening everywhere, all over the world. Because of this singular, most important and basic instruction that was given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Just cooperate with each other. Because if we have this mood of cooperation, then that is a way by which we can form a relationship, a loving relationship with each other, which is not based on wealth, caste, creed, nationality, color, or any of these material differences. The relationship of the soul is far superior to the relationship that we have of this mundane body. So this is the most important instruction for each and every one of us, to somehow or the other cooperate in spreading the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so far as we are doing that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna will give us all facilities for promoting this wonderful movement. Srila Prabhupada would say that I am not scared of external problems attacking ISKCON. What I am more concerned about is the internal problems, the internal issues. And the internal issues ultimately come down to lack of proper relationships. Because of the absence of proper relationships, ego comes in. Envy comes in. And then we slip down into a very mundane material consciousness. There is no more spirituality that is part of our consciousness, but it is purely mundane or material. So today is the very famous pastime that was enacted in Panihati of the Dahi Chida festival. So I just thought I'll spend a few minutes speaking about it. Raghunath Das Goswami, actually, if you see, he was a person who followed the instructions of his spiritual master so accurately or so exactingly. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, when Raghunath Das Goswami used to leave home again and again, to come and associate himself with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his family members, used to be so much disturbed by this. Finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to tell him that now you go back, look after your wife, look after your parents, and continue to handle everything exactly like a pound, shilling, pence man, like a materialistic person. And the moment he got this instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Das Goswami immediately went back and started doing his responsibilities as if he was completely surrendered to his family members. His wife, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, describes, actually she was as beautiful as an apsara. There was no reason actually for Raghunath Das Goswami to be leaving his whole family members because they were so rich. So when Raghunath Das Goswami went back and he started living the life exactly like an ordinary materialistic person, there were so many situations that came in his life, including that of a Mohammedan Chaudhary who accused his father of swindling some money, and somehow by his intelligence, Raghunath Das Goswami managed to settle this very nicely. But still, heart of hearts, he was very, very much looking forward to the time when he could go back and associate once again with the devotees. So after about a year like this, Raghunath Das Goswami started once again getting the pangs of separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And again he started doing the same thing that he had done a year back. He would leave his house periodically in order to run away. And then his father would send out guards, arrest him and bring him back. And one day, after so many instances like this, Raghunath Das Goswami's mother told his father that I think now we should tie up our son. He's running away like this so frequently. The best thing to do would be to tie him up. And the father was a very intelligent person. He said, Raghunath Das Goswami has got so much wealth and is married to a woman who is as beautiful as an apsara. If all those things cannot tie him down, do you think that ropes can tie him? So So anyway, one day Raghunath Das Goswami was just thinking like this, and suddenly he decided to go to Panihati. And as he came to this town of Panihati, Nityanand Prabhu was staying, was over there in that particular village. And he was there sitting with his associates on a raised platform. And Raghunath Das Goswami from a distance started paying obeisances to Nityanand Prabhu. And somebody went and told Nityanand Prabhu that Raghunath Das Goswami has come and is waiting outside and is paying his obeisances. So Nityanand Prabhu immediately ordered Raghunath Das Goswami, come here, come here. Come towards me. And but somehow Raghunath Das Goswami could not bring himself to come towards Nityanand Prabhu. So Nityanand Prabhu got off from his asan, came towards Raghunath Das Goswami, caught hold of him and told him that you are a thief. Why are you running away from me? And then very forcibly Nityanand Prabhu put his lotus feet on the head of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he looked at Raghunath Das Goswami and told him that because you are not listening to me, I give you this instruction. Please feed all my associates dahi and chida. So Raghunath Das Goswami was very, very happy to get such an instruction, and immediately he made arrangements to get hundreds and hundreds of pots where this chida could be soaked, and then he sent out his servants to the market to buy all sorts of paraphernalia that's required for this, that is chida, dahi, condensed milk, sugar, bananas, camphor. And then he also instructed them to buy 7 huge pots. And as soon as this man came back from the market with all these things, Raghunath Das Goswami personally instructed as to how this particular dahi chida should be prepared. We are going to be having this for breakfast today morning. One of the dahi chida. Right, Purushottam Prabhu? So anyway, I'm not such an expert in cooking, but Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a description that in one of the pots, large pots, or rather in all the 7 pots, Raghunath Das Goswami got chida mixed with milk, hot milk. And then after it was soaked for a sufficient period of time, then he transferred, made it into half-half. And half the chida was mixed with dahi and bananas. And half the chida was mixed with condensed milk and a particular type of banana called champakela, which is a very sweet type of banana, and camphor. And then once these preparations were made, Raghunath Das Goswami brought all the 7 huge pots and placed it in front of Nityanand Prabhu in order to offer it to him. And then Nityanand Prabhu immediately ordered Raghunath Das Goswami to distribute it to everybody. So Nityanand Prabhu was sitting on a raised platform, and there were so many of his associates. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami narrates the names of so many. Hoda Krishnadas, Ramadas, Gaur Gadadhar, Gadadhar Das, and so many others. And Raghunath Das Goswami with his own hands started transferring dahi chida into 2 different pots. One of made of milk and the other made of curds, yogurt. And started distributing it with his own hands to all the associates first. All the other devotees were surrounding Nityanand Prabhu. And there was no space. And then devotees had to go and sit on the banks of the Ganges. And even that became full. And then devotees took those 2 pots of theirs and started going into the Ganga and sitting inside the Ganga and honoring this Mahaprasad. So you can imagine they were right maybe up to their waist in the water honoring the Mahaprasad. And all of a sudden Raghav Pandit came into the scene. And just by looking at this innumerable number of people, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami narrates that there were millions of people over there having this dahi chida, innumerable people. So Raghav Pandit comes over there and tells Nityanand Prabhu that, my dear Lord, there are so many preparations that have been made in my house and they are waiting. So Nityanand Prabhu told Raghav Pandit that, don't worry, I'll come in the evening. Let me first finish this. All your preparations that you have made will not go waste. I'll come and finish it, all of them. And then Nityananda Prabhu makes Raghav Pandit sit and gives him also 2 pots of this dahi chira. All the devotees are sitting together and happily honoring this Mahaprasad. And then all of a sudden, there is a miracle. Nityananda Prabhu, from his meditation, he invites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come for the festival. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes over there, and Nityananda Prabhu goes to each and every one of the devotees sitting over there, and from their pot he takes a little bit, takes a morsel and puts it into the mouth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes a little bit from the pot and puts it into the mouth of Nityananda Prabhu. And this exchange goes on for each and every devotee who are gathered over there. And it was really a funny situation, because most of the devotees could not see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They could only see Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu was going around putting something with his hand. And they could not see who was the person who was receiving it, except a very few devotees. They could actually see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come over there. And in this way, there was such a grand festival of this Dahi Chida, where all the devotees participated. And from the neighboring villages, people heard, shopkeepers heard that there's such a grand festival going on over there. And they all came with their sugar and bananas and camphor and dahi and condensed milk. And Raghunath Das Goswami purchased all this from them, made it into dahi chida, and gave them also. Gave the shopkeepers also dahi chida. Such a resounding festival. So this is a very beautiful pastime enacted by Nityananda Prabhu for the benefit of all of us. How, just by exchanging prasadam, how we can have wonderful relationship amongst devotees. Srila Prabhupada, in his vision and exceptional wisdom, realized that just by devotees sitting together and honoring prasad, all differences between each other will be forgotten. And just before His Holiness Radhanath Swami left for the US this time, when he was addressing the brahmacharis, Maharaj was making this particular point. He said, because in this temple we had moved over to a situation where prasadam was being served on only 2 times instead of 3 times earlier. So there was no prasadam at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So Maharaj was saying that we should have prasadam at 1 o'clock, and every devotee in the temple should be coming at that time to honor prasad together. They all should sit together and honor prasad. And it should be only an exceptional situation where people sit in the second batch. As far as possible, devotees should sit together and honor prasad at 1 o'clock. And he was making the point that this is the basis of generating long-lasting relationship among us. Which is true. When we see from this particular pastime of this Dahi Chida festival, millions of people were gathered together, and each and every one of them was in such bliss honoring this prasadam. All of them were sitting together and exchanging Krishna Katha amongst each other. And whenever Raghunath Das Goswami would be going and serving the devotees, he would be saying, Hari, Hari. And all the devotees would again reciprocate by saying, Hari, Hari. And there was so much of Krishna's names that were going around. So how could it be that anybody can have differences of opinion in such a situation? So Srila Prabhupada realized how important it is to have this as the most important aspect of Krishna consciousness. Every temple, practically all over the world, has this Sunday feast program. Only for this purpose. And we have seen in some temples, but there's hardly any congregation, where there are maybe just 1 or 2 brahmacharis, on a Sunday afternoon, from nowhere, there will be about 150 to 200 people coming. From nowhere practically. And then after that, they disappear. They are not to be seen the whole week. And again, next Sunday, they come. Maybe they don't even hear the philosophy. There is, of course, in every temple, we have a Sunday feast program which has a lecture, which has some kirtan, and followed by a sumptuous prasadam. But mostly, the people who you see coming do not have much of a desire to hear philosophy. They may not be even attracted to kirtan. But when the prasadam service begins, all of them are ready with not just one plate, two plates. And all of them, when you see them honoring prasadam, it's such a wonderful sight. You will feel or you'll think that they have been hungry the whole week, the way they have been honoring this, the way they honor this prasadam. And everybody sits together and they spend nearly 1 to 2 hours over this whole exercise. They may not feel hungry. They might be having seconds, thirds, fourths. And I've seen it with my own eyes that when the Sunday feast prasadam is cooked in each of these temples that we had visited, there is ample quantity. Huge quantity of prasadam is prepared. And at the end, there is nothing remaining. And devotees are sitting for hours together just honoring Krishna Prasad and discussing about the pastimes of the Lord, associating with devotees. Machchita madgata prana bodhayantas parasparam katayantas cha maam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Krishna is there personally present where there are devotees who are associating with each other and discussing Krishna katha. So the Sunday feast program that was set up by Srila Prabhupada is exactly taking care of this particular aspect. Machchita madgata prana. Where devotees don't do anything else. Where do they discuss prajalpa when they are honoring Krishna Prasad? They discuss only Krishna Katha. At least for 2 hours a week, people come together. So, all of us can now look forward to this festival today. We have morning as well as afternoon, I'm told. And hopefully, if Radha Vallabh Prabhu agrees, we can have it also on Sunday for all the devotees. It's a very unique expression of love that we see over here during this particular festival. Are there any questions or comments? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai, Srila Prabhupada ki chai, Gaur Premanande.